Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com. Recorded live from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C.
Welcome to the Big Life podcast on Full Service Radio. We are Lina Salazar
and Ingrid Vaishus.
Every week on the Big Life, we hold inspiring and honest conversations with experts, leaders, and holistic professionals who live and help others live big, fulfilling lives by redefining success, beauty, health, and happiness. The Big Life is a provoking invitation to mindset shift and gives you the tools to go from stress and overwhelm to happy and thriving. I am Lina Salazar, a well-being coach and creator of the Food Sanity Program. I work with women who want to stop obsessing about food and have a free relationship with what they eat.
And I'm Ingrid Vaishus, a health coach. I help my clients discover achievable, sustainable strategies to better health so they can reduce overwhelm, avoid burnout, and thrive at home and at work. So Lina and I have been talking, and I know that she and I have had conversations with clients, friends, and family. And really the theme that we see is everybody's dealing with this time of quarantine in different ways. For some, this has been, the slowdown has made them feel like it's the perfect time to do all the things that they never have time to do. Learn new skills, maybe tackle a new language, read all the books, start cooking, baking. Basically, in other words, they want to be more productive. For others, it's been quite the opposite, right? The uncertainty and the forced pause has been like the perfect opportunity for them to slow down and kind of reassess. And I think some of us are toggling between the need to feel like we can slow down and give ourselves that permission, but then also maybe there's a little bit of us that wants to achieve and produce more.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That's right. And for most of us, life moves really fast all the time. So this break that we've been given could be a unique opportunity to come back to ourselves, to slow down and ask ourselves, who am I? What do I want? What are my needs? And until now, many of us may have been answering these questions, drawing from the expectations of others, right? The external world. And the coronavirus could be the moment to find the answers within. What if we could use this weird, quiet time to, as Rumi, the Persian poet, wrote, pay regular visits to ourselves? So if you're struggling with being alone with your thoughts, if you're discovering a desire to understand who you really are, or if you're simply continuing the journey of befriending and loving yourself, this episode is for you. And our guest today is Catherine Wood. She's the author of Belonging, Overcome Your Inner Critic and Reclaim Your Joy. Kat has been on the show before. She's a professional certified coach and the founder of head coach of Unbounded Potential. Welcome, Kat. We're so excited to have you on the show talking about your new book.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here again with you both.
So it's great to have you back. And I think that your book is really, really good. It's a really good read. But what inspired you to, one, write a book, and why Belonging?
Oh man, I think the inspiration for my book was really my clients. You know, I've been coaching now I'm in my seventh year of business. And the longer I was in business, the more I realized that I was having similar conversations with people. And I wrote the book because I wanted to be able to spread the messages and some of the benefits of coaching on a wider scale. And essentially, I wanted to share my story because, you know, I really believe that like attracts like, and a lot of the clients that I naturally work with overcome and work on some of the things that have also been my journey. And one of them has really been about finding a sense of belonging and worthiness separate from our achievements, separate from that externally driven model, which has us constantly gaining new achievements, getting new acronyms after our name, lengthening our resumes, like really that search of constantly wanting to accomplish something or get something done or earn something in order to feel a sense of belonging within us. And that has very much been my journey. And, you know, we all live in Washington, D.C. Like we are an achievement city. We're in like the achievement capital of our nation. So it's really common.
Hi. So I like, you know, when you read belonging, when you see the word belonging, someone's like natural tendency would be to think about community, right? Like belonging to a community or the sense of connection. But what is interesting about your book is that we are precisely taken out of that assumption. It's like, no, it's actually belonging with yourself, like finding belonging within. So can you elaborate on that a little bit, Kat?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that we can't belong in a relationship, in a community, in a friend circle, and sometimes even in our family circles until we belong with ourselves. And, you know, when I start the book, I talk about, you know, some of my own personal journey, which had me kind of find a sense of worthiness in my romantic relationships. You know, like I would kind of collapse my sense of self onto my partners or onto these relationships that I was in. And I would kind of use those relationships to feel better about myself. And it was such a, such a losing battle. And that's really how my journey to find a sense of belonging started, when I started to see kind of this, this cycle get repeated in relationships, in accomplishments. It was like I was trying to belong because of someone or something else. And you can't belong to anything outside of you until you find that sense of belonging from within.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the things that as I was looking through the book and reading parts of it, you talk a lot about intuition. And I think that we're so used to, right, someone, it's easy when someone tells us what to do, right? And that external achievement, we cross that off our list. Someone, we're looking for an answer, we ask someone for advice, and then we rely on that advice, right? And we act on it. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're very disconnected from our intuition. And I've been having this conversation with people, with a lot of people recently, with clients and a couple of colleagues, and we really have moved away from relying on our intuition, right? It's the external validation, the external person telling us what to do. How do we go about, right, reconnecting with our intuition? How do we get back to that place where we start trusting ourselves for our choices and our decisions and the next best step for us?
Mm-hmm. I love that conversation, Ingrid. As you were talking, I was really thinking about the people pleaser archetype, which, you know, I'm very much a recovering people pleaser. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's so much easier to kind of lose our sense of what we want or what we need based on what we think would make someone else happy or based on what we think someone else wants. And I'm such a longstanding case of this, and I've been working on it a lot, but there's like this instant gratification when we make someone else happy. And we think that we're being generous. We think that, oh, you know, we're easygoing, we're go with the flow, we'll just do what they want to do. And if they're happy, then we'll be happy. But the challenge is that it's never the case. Like we build up this, this sense of resentment from never getting our needs met because we're constantly collapsing our needs or turning into a chameleon in the face of someone else. And so I always think it's really useful to start regaining a sense of intuition by noticing and starting to take responsibility for how we created the dynamic in the first place. Mm-hmm. So starting to just notice like what you actually get from putting other people first, not placing the blame on them, not making it someone else's fault or problem that, that you're so easygoing or I'm so go with the flow. So starting there, right? Like just acknowledging it for what it is. I know for me personally, like I used to feel a sense of belonging from putting other people first. I felt like if I was generous or if I prioritized other people's desires and wishes, that it would mean they cared about me, which is, you know, it's such a cop-out in all honesty. So I really had to acknowledge that first, that it was more for me than it was for them. And then from there, like I could start practicing to discern what I wanted. So when I started this journey, I had post-it notes all around my apartment and I lived by myself at the time. So I wasn't as insecure about it, but I literally had post-it notes above my desk, above my kitchen sink. And they said, like, what do you want in this moment? What do you need in this moment? And it was a huge mental switch in having me start to identify my own wants and my own needs in any minute, rather than, you know, defaulting to the person I was with, or sometimes even to the tasks I was doing, because, you know what, I would also kind of, detach from my sense of intuition and my sense of self by busying myself with tasks, whether it was cleaning or organizing or tidying or dusting, because that also helped me feel better about myself. Like that was also a way that I disconnected from what I really wanted and what I really needed. So those were some initial steps, like acknowledging it, identifying what I got out of those patterns, starting to retrain my mind to recognize that even if I didn't think there was anything I wanted or needed in a moment, like that if I just gave myself a moment to focus on that question, like there always is. Like I talk about this in the book, it's one of the practices, like to consider that in any moment in time, there's probably a multitude of things that you want. And if you can start to differentiate the things that you want, that you're able to meet for yourself in that moment versus things that you want that are not possible or are not practical in a moment, you can start to reprogram your mindset to both ask of yourself what you want and meet your own needs versus, you know, I think a lot of people are scared to say what they want because they're afraid that they won't get those needs met or people won't honor their wants. But it starts with us. Like it starts with us being able to identify what we want and meet those needs for ourselves so that we'll attract relationships and people into our lives who also respect that within us. If we don't respect our own needs, then no one else is going to either.
Yeah, I think an idea that it's worth highlighting from all of what you've shared so far is that in understanding what is it that we want and identifying what we want, and let's say satisfying on our own what we want and need, we are shifting from victim mode to creator mode, right? We are sort of like becoming authors of our own life. Which is, again, as you said, highlights or emphasizes that need to be aware of our responsibility, the responsibility that we have of our own lives. So I like that you that all of like throughout the book, that was like a key idea, this shift from victim blaming the external circumstances to taking charge of my own needs, of my own life. In a way that it's doable and obviously 100% up to us, right? So I think that was a great point from an idea from the book, throughout the book. And Kat, so the reason Ingrid and I thought this was a great conversation to have right now, it's because the current circumstances, being in quarantine and just seeing how the markets and the system and the model sort of like collapses, it's also showing us how vulnerable all the stories on which we build our identity are, right? Many might be faced with the realization that they aren't doing or being who they really want to be. So could you comment on this and maybe how the book gives some answers to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we're in this really unique time, likely in our lifetimes, of reinvention and awakening and realignment, if we're willing to kind of lean into the opportunity presented to us. And I've been thinking a lot about this idea with clients that the environment we're in right now is very much like a pressure cooker, where whatever there is to explode, for better or worse, is going to come out the other side of the pressure cooker. And I've been thinking about that a lot because, I'm self-quarantining with my partner, and we've been having just like a really amazing time of being connected and communicative and open and like deeply enjoying each other's company. And had this happened a couple of years ago, like, we didn't even know how to communicate vulnerably then. Like, we would have been at each other's throats. And so I think that having a lot of compassion for ourselves and where we are right now and what we need versus what we don't need is so, so important. And one of the elements from the book that I think is really useful during this time is really acknowledging our feelings. You know, I think so many of us struggle with being able to express our feelings versus operating on top of our feelings versus operating from our commitments. And I think as a society that we're not very well practiced in being able to say we're angry rather than embodying and showing up from our anger and getting it all over people. And so I think a really useful practice from the book that I think I've been practicing myself and have been offering it to clients a lot lately is just this idea of giving yourself permission to feel all of your feelings, to feel the rage, to feel the fear, to feel the anger, to feel the hopelessness, to feel the powerlessness, to feel the gratitude, the joy, all of it. Like we, all of our feelings are valid and they are worthy and they're welcome. And I think by being able to give ourselves permission to feel our feelings rather than just talk about them or rather than just intellectualize them, but actually by giving ourselves permission to embody them, it will be that much quicker for us to get back to a place of empowerment and choice.
Yeah, I love what you just said because I feel like it's okay, one, to feel whatever it is that you're feeling, but it's also okay to recognize that this week may have been good. You may have been on top of the world. You may feel like you finally have this new routine and it's working out well, but then things can change and that's okay. And I think that this time of isolation, of quarantine, like we were saying at the beginning and Lena was alluding to, right? It's like this great opportunity to reflect and to be okay with maybe doing nothing and see what comes up. Mm-hmm. And what I find a lot is that people are really uncomfortable with doing nothing, like absolutely nothing. And our guest last week talked about that a lot too, about how do we go from a place of constant overwhelm, constant doing, constant busy, to maybe slowing down. And we realize how hard and how uncomfortable slowing down is. Mm-hmm. How can we start slowing down a little bit more? Use this time to look at the opportunity and the circumstances as a way to maybe change our relationship to ourselves, or like look at it and examine it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that topic. One of the topics that's really central to the book, and it's also just like central to my story, is the life-changing power of a morning routine. A lot of my clients right now, you know, their work schedules are different. They aren't having to go into work as early, or maybe they have more autonomy in their work-life balance these days. And they've been really focusing on empowering a morning routine. And I don't think that there's enough books and articles and experts that can talk about and really celebrate the power of a morning routine. I would say that my morning routine is probably the single starkest contrast of how I live my life today versus how I did when I started my own journey of personal transformation and personal growth. And I think that given the changing circumstances of our schedules right now, that there's never been a better opportunity to implement a habit or a practice around a morning routine. And it is so much easier to maintain healthy habits once you've really developed it into an automatic practice. And with all of us having likely some more agency or power or some semblance of control in our schedule. And as I'm saying that, I'm thinking about, you know, my best friend with two kids at home, but I'd say even she has some more semblance of control over aspects of her schedule to be able to put in place some grounding practice or routine in the morning to bring more control to how your day goes. I always say that the way you start your day is the way that your day is going to go. And so why wouldn't you want to start it for yourself?
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, one of the things that we're facing right now, it's that we're facing all of these expectations. So as we were discussing at the beginning, like this expectation to be productive, right? And in the same way, I feel that space for a routine cut, for a morning routine, could be interpreted by some as selfishness. I don't see it that way, obviously, but what can you say about that? Why is a selfishness a quality, let's say, or a thing that we shouldn't reject so much?
So if I'm being completely honest, if someone told me that I was selfish, I think I might take that as a compliment.
Because has that always been the case for you?
No, I've never been called selfish. And it's something that has always triggered me and other people. And I actually think that it's a healthy practice and can oftentimes, I know this sounds crazy, but I think that the practice of knowing what we want and being able to speak from what we want while being open to compromise is a key to successful relationships in all areas of relationships, in familial relationships, in platonic friendships, in romantic relationships. Like when two partners both have the capacity and the power to say, I want to do this, I want to do this, and then find some happy medium between, or maybe, you know, giving in to one partner one day and the other partner the next day. Like in my experience, that is such a key for success in relationships. And it's something that I had to learn the hard way from so many hurt feelings of selflessness, of not knowing what I wanted, of not speaking for myself, of not speaking up, of not saying, let's do this, let's have this for dinner. So I think that being called selfish isn't the worst thing in the world for one. And secondly, I think back to my childhood, and what I most wanted to do more than anything was to please my mom. And my mom was she still is such an incredibly selfless person. And I would have loved to have seen her take up more space, like step into her power to tell the world what she wanted. And I would have loved to have had that modeled for me, you know, to like really be more outspoken. And that's something that I've had to learn along my journey. And it's something that I definitely intend to model for my children. Because I think that some of the people who are willing to speak loudest for their opinions and their wants, they have a leg up. They have a leg up when they're going after what they want. And, you know, when I think about self-care, like I always just think back to being on an airplane, you know, when they come on the intercom and they tell us that, you know, if anything happens to this plane, like be sure you put on your own gas mask first and then help your neighbor. Like the same is true with self-care. The same is true with a morning routine. And the same is true with knowing what we want and what we need.
Yeah. I feel like, so here's my question in regards to taking up space. And I think that that is so true. Like I see it a lot I work with a lot of women, and I do feel like there's this, like, we're not supposed to take up space. We're supposed to like stay in the back, not voice of our opinion, not ruffle the feathers. How do we go about building that like ability to take up more space, to be more confident?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, it comes back to my morning routine. It's really been a life-changing practice for me. And I'd say one of the rituals that I do every morning is that I journal. And like that in and of itself has been life-altering. But I always used to hate journaling. Like I always had such a negative relationship with journaling, and I only journaled when I was heartbroken about a boy. until I started, you know, coaching and working with coaches, and one mentor and one coach and one author, like after the next and the next and the next, they're just all brought up this idea of having a journaling practice. And journaling is a practice that has helped me be able to be self-expressed and know what I want and know what I stand for. And that's really been coming back to your question, Ingrid, around intuition. My journaling practice is I actually write two letters. I write a letter to God. We may have talked about this on our first podcast. Is this something?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We did.
Yeah. Okay. I thought we may have. And then I write that letter back to myself from the divine part of me that already knows the answers. And it's really been life-changing because, you know, our subconscious programming is so strong, and the idea that we don't know what we want or we don't know what we think, like it is something that runs on repeat in the back of our subconscious until we allow ourselves to turn the station, like turn the station to, I do know what I want, turn the station to, I do know what matters to me. And journaling has been a structure that's helped me be able to distinguish what I want, to then be able to say it, whether it's in my book or to a client who's struggling or to my partner or to a friend. Like So that's just one practice that has supported me in helping to reprogram my subconscious thoughts that have me think I don't know what's important to me, or I'm not self-expressed, or I don't know what to say. And, you know, to be honest, like it's something that I'm still currently practicing on, because I oftentimes am much more comfortable listening than I am talking. As hard as that might sound being interviewed by you two, but
you're doing great, Kat.
It really is. It's something that I've really needed to work on to kind of reprogram. And like right now I'm currently going through a year-long Kundalini yoga teacher training program, because that's another structure that I'm trying on to help me be more embodied, like to be more self-expressed in my body so that I can show up self-expressed everywhere.
Kat, so journaling is one of those practices that you say work for you. And it is indeed a very powerful practice. What other tools or mindset shifts would you say are, let's say, your favorite ones from the book?
My favorite mindset tools for becoming more self-expressed.
Yeah, or even for people who want to like start this journey of belonging and finding themselves in themselves.
Okay. Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure I was answering the question you wanted. So I would say my favorite exercise in the book is one that I talk about in the second chapter, the second section of the book. And it's around taking yourself out on weekly dates. And there are so many reasons why I think that's important, but for me, the practice of taking myself out on a weekly date, which given may look a little different right now, given that we're all self-quarantining.
But I might be in the living room or
yeah,
the kitchen.
Right? Definitely still believe it's possible.
Oh, yeah. You can go for a walk.
Yeah. I think it's really important, because I think that many of us don't know how to enjoy being with ourselves, and we cope with that in many different ways, right? Like my version of that was I always was being task oriented, doing something or working. Like work is a way that I have consistently throughout my whole lifetime avoided being with myself. And when I was really healing from a broken relationship, that was when I first realized that I didn't know how to enjoy being with me. So how was I ever going to be able to enjoy being in a relationship? And so learning how to date myself, which, you know, that was my original inspiration for writing the book. It was also the original draft of the title, I Just Want to Date Myself. Was a really transformative practice in not dissociating, like in not separating my heart from my mind and just like busying myself behind my work, but in learning how to enjoy being with me and learning how to enjoy discovering what I love separate from work. You know, like I work with a lot of people who are really passionate about their work, and it's such a easy practice to think that, you know, our work is our joy. Our work is our life when we love what we do. And I think that those people who love what they do and feel so self-identified with their work, that it becomes even more important for those types of people to find hobbies and interests and passions outside of their work, so that they have that that solid foundation and find that sense of self in who they are, so that they can actually take more risks in their work, and they can, you know, not be so self-identified with failures, and they can even dream bigger in their work when they know who they are outside of it. And so for me, like taking myself out on a weekly date and going to museum or taking a bubble bath or learning how to garden, like that's something I've really been enjoying over the past, you know, month and change now with all of the adjustments in our schedule, is finding new ways to enjoy being with myself.
Yeah, that's definitely been a common denominator in all of our episodes. So like questioning this tendency of us to identify and find identity and sense of purpose in our jobs, or let's say in my case with the women I work with, in the food they eat, how clean they eat, how much exercise they do. It's sort of like this attachment, right, to these things that are changing in nature and are not permanent. So hence the importance of finding worth and identity in other things that might be more, let's say, authentic and long lasting. So I love that you highlighted that. And also the importance of joy and pleasure, right, Ingrid? And I also talk a lot about this, right, Ingrid?
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to, before we get into joy and pleasure, I want to revisit the idea of a morning routine, because I feel like for our listeners out there who might be overwhelmed, who might be busy, who think life is go, 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 and they're thinking, oh, so now I need to journal on my morning routine. And while I agree that journaling is a really important process, how can we look at our, like, if we're just starting, right? And if journaling sounds like, oh my God, this is so daunting and overwhelming, what are some other things that are part of your morning routine that have been life-changing and that could help other people, like, start to get into this, right? The small step of what I need to do right now so that I can maybe at some point start journaling in the morning or make that part of my routine.
Yeah, I love that. It doesn't matter where you start. Like I think that any practice that you do just for yourself is perfect and a perfect place to start. So my morning routine is something that has evolved and something I've reinvented many times over the years. Like at this point, if I'm being totally honest, my morning routine is probably 2 hours. And I take that time without fail every morning for me. But when I started, it was 10 minutes. And that's just been something I've been able to expand and reinvent over time. And at the time, you know, when I first started, 10 minutes felt like a huge accomplishment. And it was. Mm-hmm. So I'd say, acknowledging where you are and starting from there is a great place to start. Secondly, not comparing your routine or your sacred ritual to anyone else's and having compassion for you and where you are. The first practice that I took when I was trying to start my mornings intentionally was actually a visualization practice. And if I'm being totally honest, I actually visualized how I wanted to feel in a relationship, because at the time I was single and I was trying to bring love into my life. And so I would sit on my meditation cushion every morning and I would visualize how I wanted to feel in my dream relationship, because I think oftentimes we don't necessarily end up meeting the person that we thought we were going to. They may not look how we thought they would look, or they may not enjoy exactly what we imagined they would enjoy. But you always know how you want to feel in a relationship. And so that's where I started. I started with a daily visualization, and that really worked for me as a starting off place. I think that a morning visualization, or even a couple minutes of focused meditation or movement in your body, is a beautiful place to practice. Some of the practices that I've incorporated into my morning routine over the years are starting off my morning with warm lemon water, having a green smoothie every morning. I take a daily bubble bath in the morning. I also exercise in the morning. I was one of those people who always hated to exercise in the morning. And I resisted it so much until, you know, one day I felt the resistance and I honored my commitment to start working out in the morning. And that was that. And that's really kind of the power of allowing your mind to help you reprogram things that you don't feel like doing, like allowing your commitments to be more important than your feelings. Another practice I do every morning is reading. And I think that for me, reading is a practice that really connects me with inspiration and oftentimes provides a lot of creativity for myself throughout the day.
These are definitely a handful of great ideas for people. But I think the key message is that find whatever works for you, but make it definitely protect. So like create these boundaries and protect this space where you are able to find your day with a lot of intention and also headspace, right? And slowing down. I think the headspace and slowing down definitely sets the tone for the rest of the day.
Can I add one more thing?
Of course. Yeah.
One more thing is to have a lot of grace with yourself when you fail, when you're starting out, because I think that whenever we're trying to integrate a new habit into our life or our lifestyle, if we're not perfect or if we don't get it perfectly the first time, we put so much pressure and judgment on ourselves that it oftentimes prevents us from starting again and getting back on the horse. And I just, you know, I really feel like it's so important to give yourself permission to screw it up and make mistakes and forget a morning, be human, not feel like it, and to not make that mean anything about you, to not make it mean you're not committed, to not make it mean you don't want to integrate this new habit, but to have so much compassion with yourself and ultimately allow that self-compassion to support you in starting tomorrow a new day, starting tomorrow afresh with a clean slate.
Yeah, this is definitely, I mean, it's meant to help, not to create another thing that we want to achieve and do perfectly, right? Yes. Belonging shouldn't be another thing, another box that we need to check.
Another thing on the to-do list.
Exactly, another thing in the to-do list. It's definitely, this is meant to help all of you guys. So, but those were very helpful, Kat. And I think it was good that you interrupted me and made that point because it's very important, that topic of self-compassion and kindness and grace to ourselves. Mm-hmm. This has been a great conversation. Obviously, we could like dig deeper into the book much more. And for those who haven't read the book yet, it's packed with practical tools. It's easy to read. So we definitely recommend the book because it's a tool. It's a tool that will guide you through this journey. And Kat, while these are uncertain times and challenging, Ingrid and I believe that one of the best tools to reduce stress, sort of like, and to kind of calm our anxiety in these crazy times, it's to focus on the positive. So we'd love to know, what does living a big life mean to you?
I love the question. I just had a smile on my face, which you can't see, but you know, I think
we felt it.
I feel like, for me these days, living a big life, looks like how I can be of service. You know, I feel like right now there's just such a call forth to be of service in the world and to look for how you can contribute. And I see that around me everywhere, just so many people looking for how they can help, how they can contribute, how they can be of service. You know, it's one of the reasons I chose to publish the book now during the virus rather than wait, because I think that it can help people realign how they're living their life and the choices that they're making. And I think it's something that I think about now more so than ever. Like, truly living a big life looks like how I can be of service. And that starts with how I can be of service to myself so that I can be of even greater service to everyone else. For me, like, working out has taken on new life for me, and something I've been enjoying immensely. And I'm sure the two of you would be very proud of me, but I've been focusing a lot more on nutrition and clean eating. And it's been really empowering for me to really take care of myself at that next level so that I can be of greater service.
I love the idea of being of service. And I do think that one thing that has come out of this situation is you see how good people are and how many good things are happening. So I love that. So I think I know what you might answer, but what are you excited about right now?
I mean, I feel like I'm excited most days. I really enjoy each day and the opportunities that they present. So I feel like there's a lot of joy in my life right now, but a couple things to note are that Saturday is my birthday, and I've been, I'm a woman of celebration. I love to celebrate. And so I'm planning a virtual birthday and book launch and dance party on Saturday and or Sunday, I guess. And I'm thrilled to see how it goes, because we're going to have the bachata and the merengue and the Bollywood dance to represent my partner's side. And we're just going to see how it goes. A virtual Zoom dance party before the sun goes down, if I'm being honest.
That's great, Kat. And for those who are looking to connect with you and to read the book, where can they find you? Where can they find the book?
Yeah. So the book is called Belonging, Overcome Your Inner Critic and Reclaim Your Joy. And it's on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. And my website is unbounded-potential.com. And I have a lot of fun over on Instagram at Unbounded Potential as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kat. This has been a wonderful conversation. I feel like Lena said we could go on forever. We appreciate your time, and please, people, go buy the book. It really is a great read and chock full of like exercises that you can do at your own pace. Lena, do you have any? And I think you had your
coming up. Before we go, let me share that every 2 weeks I am holding a women's reflection group on Wednesdays. And the next one will take place on May 6th, next Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And it will be virtual, obviously. And we're going to talk about listening to our hunger.
Perfect. If you haven't taken her opportunity, I would definitely recommend it. Thank you so much for joining us. It has been, I hope the show was helpful, and we look forward to coming back next season. We'll see how this things roll out during this pandemic, after the pandemic. But we would love to hear from you. If you have any show ideas or requests for people who we should interview, feel free to send us a DM on Instagram. I'm at Ingrid_wellness.
And I am at live.well.way.
Stay safe and healthy, everyone.
Thank you so much, Kat. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you.